Hello and welcome to Ask Margot Today. I'm Margot Coatsworth, and by way of introducing myself today, I'd like to make reference to a previous intro of mine where I talked quite a bit about the concept of time. And afterwards I thought, well, maybe that was a bit too much for our program. But I thought some more about it and I realized that we must always be pushing boundaries of our understanding and of our knowledge because that's just what we do as a species. We ask ourselves questions. We form possibilities in our imagination, and then we pursue them to see if perhaps they might open up more of life to us than we previously believed possible. Think about our progress in medicine, or science, or space travel. What we have discovered in life has only been made possible because someone said, oh, maybe we haven't got the whole picture. Maybe there's some more for us to learn, to understand. We asked why or why not. Think about medicine a century ago and how much more we know now because somebody said, well, maybe we should investigate germs or bacteria or any other aspect of how our bodies work. That's shown us what's curable now that we thought was incurable then, what's discoverable now and what we didn't know then. So that's my little justification for going right out there with the concept of time, saying that perhaps time can be more under our management than we've previously thought. Part two of my introduction today is going to be around words because I'm endlessly fascinated by words. And I often will just look up the definition of a word to fully immerse myself in the glory of that particular word. I'm especially interested in the power of words to change things. The words we select to use can change the atmosphere in a room. It can change the response we get from a person. It can change our expectations. And it can change our own personal state. Words are incredibly powerful. You can build a person up with words, or you can tear them down. You can encourage a child to believe in itself with words, or you can undermine his confidence and belief in himself, in others, and in the world. I want to read you an amazing quote I found. It's from Bruce Lee. He says, "Don't speak negatively about yourself, even as a joke. Your body doesn't know the difference. Words are energy and cast spells. That's why it's called spelling. Change the way you speak about yourself and you can change your life. What you are not changing, you are also choosing." That's quite powerful, I think. So my challenge to you today is to think about the words you're choosing to use, how you talk about yourself, how you talk to yourself. Do you say, I can't do that. I don't think I can manage that. I don't think I can cope. Change all of that. Say, I've got incredible coping skills. I can manage that with ease. I can certainly deal with anything because I have amazing inner strength. With your children, instead of saying, little Johnny, you're always late, or you can't get your act together, you could say, I can see, little Johnny, that this is going to be a great day for you. You're getting off to a good start. I look forward to hearing about your day when you get home. Well done. Little Johnny's face will light up, and he'll go off feeling that he can do anything because his mother or father just told him he could. I hope there's some food for thought in there for you. Just because we've always done things in a particular way doesn't mean that we have to keep doing that. We get to choose who we're going to be that day, how we're going to show up in the world, and what our story is going to be to others and to ourselves. Okay, now to our questions. The first one of the day is from Matt. And he's asked me what to do when a conversation is hijacked. He says it keeps happening to him and he doesn't know why or what to do. Hi, Matt. My first question to myself, if I were you, would be, how important is it that I get this point across to this person? Do they care? And does it matter to me? Because often the person doesn't care what you have to say. It doesn't matter to them that you've got a point that you're trying to make. If they're not giving you the airspace to do it, to ask and to speak for yourself, then ask yourself, do I want to share my pearls of wisdom with someone who isn't valuing them? And the answer to that is probably, I don't think so. And that's fine. Take heart and keep your treasures for another time and another person, and share them when you know they're going to be received with the respect they deserve. More than once I've been in a gathering when there's been so much dominant chat that I've actually thought I'll just relax and watch the party and say nothing because I can't be bothered making an effort to interject with something I feel is of value if nobody else cares. So that's number one, Matt. The next thing to do is to say to the person or group, I have something I'd really like to share with you. May I? It's direct. It's clear. You're trying to get some space. You're asking them for permission. And the unspoken question is, will you give me your time and attention for this? And also, you're actually telling them that's enough from them. If you want to, you could say, when you've finished, might I share something with you that I think you'll appreciate? That implies you expect them to finish, and then you expect them to give you the floor. If they say, sure, but don't do it, refer to my first point, which is to keep your treasures for somebody who values them. You can say things like, if I can finish my story, or let me finish my story, or shall I continue? With the just so ever so slightly pointed edge there to say they've had their time. One of my children simply says, now back to me. We all laugh and let her talk. You could give that a go. It's light, but it is very direct. My brother used to say to his children, silence, when he was in the street with them. And I remember somebody walking past and just sniggering because they knew that it absolutely was never going to work. Maybe keep that just for your children rather than your peers. There are people, of course, who believe they have a bigger, better, bolder, brighter story and that the world needs to hear it. In a work situation, you do have to manage those kinds of people. In a personal situation, you have the privilege of deciding whether or not you want to engage with that person who's determined to hijack the conversation. You'll know if you want to be a passive listener or whether you want to step in and pull the conversation back to the main topic or to actually get to finish your own story or whether you want to spend time with that person at all. I hope there are some thoughts in there that will resonate with you, Matt, and that you will find a way to manage these situations which do seem to pop up quite often in life. Our next question today is about conversations that have come up recently around the etiquette of dating. I was speaking with Jenny recently and she said people don't always want the same things in a romantic relationship. Of course, I can see that we're all individuals and we want different things in life. Her question, though, was, are there absolutes that should stand no matter what when we're contemplating a new relationship or looking at an existing one? I believe there absolutely are, just as we have absolutes in the way we treat people outside of romantic relationships. If someone contacts us, we should respond unless they make us feel uncomfortable. You never have to respond to someone who makes you feel uncomfortable or pressured or cornered or any of those things. We should treat people with respect and kindness, and we should expect to be treated the same way. If you keep this belief at the forefront of your thinking, you'll build your values around that. And I don't see how it could be possible for you not to receive that back. Never drop your standards to match someone else's. If you have people in your world who just don't operate like that, they will drop off your radar because there'll be no resonance between the two of you. There are a whole series of things that you can say to someone who you feel needs to be reminded of your values and standards and how you insist on being treated. Sometimes you only have to say something once and they get it. For example, I never expect to hear you speak to me like that again. That's it. Say no more. Sometimes the shortest, sharpest things work. No, for example, is a complete sentence. You can say, that'll be a no from me, or I'll be saying no to that, or just no, thank you. I always have the greatest admiration for couples who don't publicly run each other down or rubbish each other. Sadly, it's kind of rare, but it is a worthy pursuit. Imagine meeting somebody and never having to criticize them to anyone else. That might seem like a bit of a pipe dream, but it's an aspirational dream, and aspirations are on the way to dreams, so think about that. Let's go over a few bullet points. Respect, kindness, accepting no when no is what's being asked for by the other person. Trying not to be critical, being polite and considerate. I think with everything that we expect from other people, we must start by looking at ourselves and ask, am I that person? Am I offering that thing? Am I respectful, considerate, responsive, positive? If you think about it, do unto others as you would have them do to you kind of sums it up. If you want someone to respond to you, you had better be a responsive person. If you want someone to be kind to you, then be a kind person. If you want someone to be respectful, respect others. Maybe it's time for you to make that change so that you can see the change in your life that you want. That's a Gandhi thing, isn't it? Be the change. If you're going on a date, ask yourself, what would she like? And then do it. And then keep asking yourself or her that same question and keep doing it. That goes for men and women, of course. I hope that's helpful, Matt. I know that if you focus on that and what emanates from you, you will get a different response back from others. It's a universal law. I like to call it the boomerang effect. If you send your boomerang out, a different boomerang is not the one that comes back to you. It's the same as the one you sent out. Our third question today is from Hadley. Hadley says, I feel kind of dogged by my past and I want to let it go, but it always seems to pop up and things that go wrong in my life remind me of my past, places I'm stuck in my life, attitudes I've got about myself and other people and how they respond to me. It all seems to remind me of the junk in my past and I can see it's not helping me, but I can't seem to shake it off and I need to find out how to do that or I'm just going to be in this perpetual loop of the rubbish of my past. I feel it's preventing me from living my best life, as they say. Please, can you help me with this? Hello, Hadley. I found a quote recently that I really loved. I want you to take this quote and make it your own because it says it all. Here we go. Never be a prisoner of your past. It was just a lesson, not a life sentence. From a therapist's point of view, it's not so much the thing that happened to you in the past, but the meaning that you attach to it. What did that incident make you feel and believe about yourself? That's where the undoing needs to happen. That's where you have to start to change your thinking. A lot of this involves forgiving and letting go. If you can forgive what happened, primarily for your release and your freedom, it'll be easier for you to disassociate from it and not allow it to have that same power over you. You must learn to tell yourself a story that serves you, and you must learn to say, I'm not a person of my past. It was just a lesson. It was not a life sentence. Because if you allow it to be a life sentence, you have given up every single piece of your power over what happened to you in the past and over yourself as a person. You have said, this was my past and this is still me now and these are my limits. But why would you do that? Because the only person who can place limits on you is you. No one else controls your mind except you. No one controls your feelings except you. No one controls the perspective you take on something except you. So you have this enormous unlimited power to dictate the place that everything has in your life. The place you give to the past. In essence, the power and authority you give to other people over you. You may have felt disempowered in the past by people who have challenged your confidence, your power, your voice, your message, or any other number of things, but they can't take from you what you don't allow them to take. We need to get better at seeing the things in life that are enriching our lives, and if things are not contributing anything of value or worth, we should look at them and say, okay, that's enough. I'm setting you free. Once you've done this kind of investigative and foundational work, I call it clearing the decks, then you can move on from there to your daily life and pay attention to the story you're telling about yourself and the story you're telling about your past. You may just decide to say, my past was not much chop, but I don't allow that to dictate my future. You may not even really believe it yet, but you must say it anyway. Most importantly, you must hear yourself say it, because that reinforces it on a conscious level and also on a subconscious level, and that's where the power is. Your daily job is to overwrite anything that is not serving you by laying into your subconscious mind everything you do want, every truth about you, that you are an amazing, empowered, clever, kind, smart human being of inestimable value, because that's the truth for every single one of us. And that's the story you must tell in order to free ourselves from the old habits of the past that can act like tendrils in a way that float into our present. You can snip them off with your words. One of the rules of our mind is that we must learn by repetition. So the more we tell ourselves something new, the more we can displace the old belief. Old beliefs will sit where they are and where they've lived all this time until you replace them with a new and better belief. And that's your job. No one else can do it. I hope that helps. Our last question today is around living well. This question comes from Kate, and she says she wants to find a good way to positively approach her life now that she's retired. She says she's had an interesting life and she wants to continue to have the same in her future, but she gets upset when she sees that many of her friends are dying, and not even older people sometimes. She wants to feel that she's making the most of every moment of every day. She's kind of there, but she wouldn't mind a bit of encouragement around how to live well for the duration of her life. Kate, I was speaking to a friend the other day who often calls himself the Zen Master, and he said to me about his life going forward that although his time he saw as finite, he knew that the opportunities within that time were infinite. The potential of that time was infinite for him. I loved that approach because seeing the time and space in front of you as full of infinite possibilities is fantastic and absolutely true, because you can choose to go in a multitude of directions and make a multitude of choices so that even time itself feels infinite. So, Kate, when you're thinking about what you're going to do in the coming years, think about no matter how finite time might appear, you have infinite possibilities and infinite choices and infinite opportunities within that. If you approach your life where that kind of philosophy is in place, it'll open up everything for you. Because I always like to touch on what to do practically as well, you might like to make a list of the things you'd like to do in life, a dream list. I don't like to call it a bucket list because it sounds kind of final, but call it a dream list. You could shuffle everything on it into order of priority. Imagine if you catapulted yourself to, say, 100 years old, and you looked back from there to where you are now. What would you like to have done in that time? Something that will have given you this greatest satisfaction and enjoyment. You could categorize these things further and say, okay, at this point in time, I can start on these things. You could color code them. You could prioritize the lists. You could get started on making those things happen. Then you might address the next level that might need some organization first. You might need to finish work, or you might need to wait for the next holiday, or you might need to have some other practical things come into play before you can do them. It's very satisfying to step into your ideal world and your imagination where you feel a bit stuck in the reality you're in now. I watched a movie just the other night where a group of women who had cancer were together. They were undergoing treatment and they were in pain, some of them at periods of time in quite a lot of pain. And they would support each other to deal with the pain by switching their attention. So they would sit in a circle and hold hands, and the person who was dealing with the issue at the time would take the others with her into her imagination and dream world where she would love to be, on a beach, dancing at a party, at someone's wedding, whatever they imagined as their truly happy place. All of this served to distract the dreamer from the pain in the moment. This concept works in all sorts of ways. If you feel pessimistic or pressured or sad, you can just take a moment and step into your truly happy place. Anything that brings us joy and elevates our state, that's focusing us on something positive that we really want, is like an elixir for us. It contributes to our mental, physical, and emotional health. There are scientific reasons for all of this. It shows that our thinking is the power base for our bodies, and it's a control center of our lives. They say the universe doesn't know if something is real or imagined, and that our subconscious doesn't know if something is real or just intensely imagined. I don't know if we explain that whole thing very well because the universe is very smart, but I get the principle that we are immersing ourselves in the reality we want, in the imagery we want. We're creating what we want in our minds. Personally, I don't think there's a downside to this. To be in a happy place helps you focus on what you want and not what you don't want. When life feels a bit tough, it's a good place to go to regenerate, to stabilize, and to restore your picture of the life you choose. So, Kate, that's kind of my take on how to deal with finite time versus infinite possibilities. Ignore the finite time and focus wholeheartedly and absolutely with optimism on the possibilities that are limitless. Thank you for that question. And if anyone has more questions, please send them to us at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me, margo@margounlimited.com. Margo has a T under the contact tab. We'll finish today, as usual, with our message from the universe, which we call the Word. I like to call this being a conduit for what God wants to say to us. I prefer the word conduit to the word channel because it seems a bit witchy-poo to me. I want to read you this definition that I looked up. So this is taking what I do from a biblical point of view. This is the gift of prophecy. The gift of prophecy is a special ability to speak forth the message of God. A prophet is basically a spokesman for God. He or she delivers the word of God to people by means of direct revelation. Prophetic utterances can deal with certain individuals or a larger context. It does not always refer to the future. The word is used far more to proclaim the word of God rather than to predict the future. I use the term the universe because it makes it easier for people who have an unresolved issue with God. You know, they might be cross at him about something or not understand how this whole God-man thing works. And that can prevent them from actually getting past that to see the message. I heard someone the other day say, the universe has got my back. And I thought, we're so happy to say that. And not many people will say, God has got my back. So from the point of view that the universe is another name for God, I'm going to give to you this week's message. Here we go. Labels do not always serve you. Once you label something, you give it recognition. That's fine if it's worthy of such. If it is not, though, and if you do not want it, then do not label it. Choose the things of your life that you want, and then label them. I am a... dot, dot, dot. If you choose just three labels for yourself, what would they be? Now that will cause you to be selective about what you identify yourself with. It's interesting, really, the idea of labels. I don't like to label illnesses. Sometimes I feel it gives them a place that they don't deserve. Cancer, for example, I'll call it the C thing with a little C because I don't want to give it important focus. That may sound a bit delusional, but it works for me. And the message we have from the universe today is all about our words and labels and making the important things the ones we focus on. So thank you for your time today, and I look forward to seeing you next time. I'm Margot de Coatsworth, and this is Ask Margot.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.